Her maneuvering thrusters were sluggish, and she remembered that she'd redistributed their power. As the thunder arrived and white filled her viewport, she slapped wildly at the console, trying to retract her S-foils and turn the cross of the ship into a dagger that would plunge straight down. A wave of heat cascaded over her vessel, singeing her skin through the cockpit canopy. But then the B-wing dropped away, and she looked up to see an explosion like a battle station detonating. Like Scarif, burning under the Death Star's superlaser. Dark specks dashed themselves against the fiery wave, and she realized that they were TIE fighters, perfectly positioned to take the blow. She wanted to sit back, to rest and let the B-wing fall. But Quell's voice came through the comm and said,
"Shattuck, where are you?"
She rerouted power away from the weapons. Her thrusters came back online, arresting her fall.
"About a kilometer below you," she said. "But I'm okay. And just chaff, all right? Station's scorched. Whole port side looks like it's burning. But it's not coming apart. We took out 3 TIEs, which gives us breathing room. Maybe the time we need."
"Maybe?"
Chaz asked.
"Still no word from Kairos," Quell said. "Get back up. We're not through fighting."
Chaz could live with that. She angled her ship back toward the battlefield and smiled as the music started up again. It was garbled and staticky, but it was exactly what she had hoped for. 5. Will recognized Char, the TIE covered in ash. He recognized Blink, who had mocked him when Will had reached out, who had said, "You're going to be food in the guts of the Ordal God," on the day that Will had been tested and found wanting. He didn't know how he recognized them. Char was no longer black with carbon scoring and debris. Blink no longer fired a single laser cannon. If he told Nath, the man would have mocked Will's certainty and insisted he was imagining things. Maybe he was. But the ghosts of Riot Squadron had flown with Will for weeks now. Was it any surprise that the ghosts of Shadow Wing had arrived at last? He spun his A-Wing away from Blink's latest folly, opened his throttle, and tried to lure his enemy into pursuit. Nath raced ahead below, maneuvering between the orbital station's turrets and taking pot shots at sensor arrays and gravity generators.
"I could use a hand," Will called. "Pulling one into your targeting zone, assuming he'll take the bait."
"I'm a little busy,"
Nath said. His voice was almost inaudible through the static, as if he were whispering.
"Any chance you can handle this one?"
"I'm handling all of them,"
Will said, doing his best to suppress his irritation. "You've never flown a Y-Wing," he reminded himself. "You can't know what he's dealing with." But Will's shields had nearly burst, and another solid hit would tear his fighter apart.
"Please, I need a few seconds to recharge my deflectors, and I can't get it by myself."
Nath hesitated before answering.
"Do what you have to do."
Blink remained the closest TIE behind Will. There were others ahead and farther back, but they were problems he could deal with 15 seconds into the future. Blink, however, was loosing shot after shot, close enough to illuminate Will's cockpit with emerald light. Will was about to let him get closer. He kept his thrusters at maximum output. He couldn't afford to hint at what he was doing, while dipping and soaring to sheer off speed and draw Blink in. Will cast a glance behind him and saw the dark eye of the TIE cockpit silhouetted against the scarlet mist, then plunged toward the orbital station at a 40-degree angle. His breathing was shallow, and his bones felt ready to crack as he leveled out a few dozen meters in front of Nath's Y-Wing. Blink followed. They were a perfect line. Will in Blink's sights, Blink in Nath's. "Come on, shoot him, shoot him!" Will saw the ripple of the Y-Wing's cannon blasts outside his cockpit. The shots had gone wide, maddeningly wide, not even close to Blink. And Will knew it meant his own death. He didn't have time to spin away, didn't have time to shunt all power to aft deflectors and hope for the best. He tried to think of home, and saw Satanique instead. Yet he didn't die. A rumble like thunder passed through his ship and through his body. His A-Wing leapt as if slapped aside by a god's cosmic hand, off to starboard and away from the orbital station. Emerald flashed where Blink had aimed his weapons, but the green was pale and dim compared with the bright glow in the distance, on the opposite side of the facility. When Will regained control of his fighter, he saw flames racing across metal.
Lark to Quell. Lark to Chas.
He called.
What happened? Blew a gas pod.
Chas answered.
You should try it.
Will didn't smile. He glanced at the ties on his scanner, scattered by the shockwave, but quickly regrouping, and permitted himself another look at the fire. From a distance, he saw no gaping hole, nothing sheared off by the destructive power. But the station was burning. Suddenly, all his thoughts of Riot Squadron and Shadow Wing and Blink and Char seemed limp and selfish. They weighed on him still, but it was the crushing weight of a corpse. Kairos was still on the station, along with her strike team. The station was burning. What were his problems compared with hers? Be safe, he thought, and returned to the fight. 6. Orbital One was on fire, but that wasn't Shakar and Ares's biggest concern. The blown Tabana gas pod wasn't a catastrophe. It was a knife in the guts of her production schedule, and the resulting damage would be considerable. But she could still recover. The warning indicators shining from every console in the command center were a badge of shame, not defeat. She'd read the specifications of Orbital One, and it was built to survive a massive industrial disaster. The fires would spread only until they met the reinforced bulkheads between station sections, and then slowly die as they exhausted all oxygen in their compartments. Even if she lacked the staff to see to the fire suppression systems, the safety shutdowns, all the protocols that were meant to be followed, Orbital One would remain intact. No, her biggest problem was the same as it had been from the start. Her pilots were still trapped in the hangars. She had no defenses, no path to victory without them. Rassus! She cried. Only three other officers remained at the command center. She'd begun short-staffed and sent the others to check on her pilots after internal comms had shorted out. But she had to shout to be heard over the wailing alarms. How much longer? Until we can release the fighters! She saw the answer in his eyes. Too long. The fires had disrupted repair of the hangar doors.
15 minutes, he said. Another 15 minutes!
Shakara had the dignity and the presence of mind not to swear. The wailing alarms dropped abruptly in volume. For that, at least, she was grateful. Her eyes found the black glass stare of the Emperor's messenger. The Wraith had said nothing since its arrival, and it remained at its post near the doorway. Shakara wanted to approach it, to shake it, to demand answers. Not just to her current predicament, but about why it was there at all. What the Emperor intended it to do. We wiped out a planet for you, she thought. The least you can do is tell us why. Tell us how to survive. Tell us how to preserve your empire. She said nothing. She knew she would receive no answer, and the empire she had fought for, the empire she knew, had rewarded determination over groveling. She was among the Empire's best. She had seen the Empire grow and evolve and surpass the legacy of the Old Republic. If she couldn't win today, perhaps Pandem Nigh deserved to fall. Blast them open, she said. Rassus didn't seem to hear. Then he turned abruptly from his console.
What?
The hangar doors, she answered. Seal off the sections as best we can, given the damage, and give the fighters permission to blow a hole through anything in the way. Yes, it won't be a simple fix. Yes, we'll do serious harm to subsystems, and we'll need to evacuate additional compartments. But we've no other recourse. Rassus didn't question her further. He brought his link to his mouth and started snapping orders. Shakara looked again to the Emperor's messenger. It didn't react, of course. Had she been expecting approval? A pat on the cheek from the Emperor's ghost? Rassus nodded to her. Shakara stepped to the railing behind one of the tactical consoles and clasped it with both hands. A moment later, a shudder ran through the deck. A new set of warnings lit up. The shudder became a jolt, and a low, hollow boom like the beat of a metal drum resounded through the station. She imagined the first TIE fighters hovering inside the wreckage of the hangar, directing their fire at rubble and carving through a bulkhead. She imagined a whirlwind sucking air and debris through the newly created gap, and the TIE pilots struggling not to collide in the face of such chaotic force. In a matter of moments, each squadron would creep through the gap and arrive in Pandem Nigh's atmosphere. Above the burning Orbital One, they would swarm the handful of enemy ships and regain control of the battlefield. The enemy fleet outside the minefield could press toward the planet if it wanted. Against the full force of the 204th Fighter Wing, Shikara was confident it would lose. Victory had a price, but it was coming. 7. The turret was warm beneath Kairos' gloved hands. Like a living thing, it would grow hot with fury, its heartbeat pulsing, and then creak softly when it was quiescent. Kairos stroked the metal of the barrel, turning it away from the burning corpses of the three stormtroopers who had entered the docking bay. She wondered why so few would come. She could only assume that the enemy was not aware of the U-Wing's presence, or of the presence of the strike team. She had noticed the orbital station shudder and been certain that her mission was complete. But the Special Forces troops had signaled her with a single oblique transmission, confirming that the task was not done. So she waited. When there was the opportunity to kill, to puncture and incinerate the creatures who crawled through the station in the name of their fallen lord and emperor, she killed. When she was forced to wait, she waited. She was not patient, but neither was she an animal. A deep, booming sound, resonant and metallic, shook the station a second time. The U-Wing, still aloft on its repulsors, barely shook. Kairos shifted her weight all the same. What was happening? She was needed to guard her vessel, yet was she needed elsewhere too? The cockpit comm spoke.
Strike team to Kairos. Detonators in place. Returning to the transport now.
She stepped away from the turret and entered the cockpit long enough to trail her fingers across the controls and send a signal of her own. She might not know what had transpired, but that was not her purpose. The signal was sent. The defector would determine all their fates. 8. Quell watched jagged metal tear through mist as a section of hull along the station side erupted. At first she didn't understand what had happened. Maybe, she thought, the fires from the gas pod's destruction had detonated some volatile piece of machinery. But then she saw shadows within the cloud of smoke and wreckage. A trail of TIE fighters emerged from the station's wound like insects roused from their nest. First one, then a pair, then a steady stream, whole squadrons no longer captive. They were blasting their way out of the broken hangars. Shadow Wing was free. Quell's eyes were fixed on the dark trail. She barely had the presence of mind to touch her comm.
Lark, your side of the station. Are you seeing? I see it,
he replied.
They're coming out.
Then we've lost, she thought. They'd barely been able to survive against two patrols. Against every squadron in the 204th, they were doomed. But though her mind was nearly paralyzed, her body was not. The enemy still pursued her, and she pulled up and away from the station, her vision swimming as she looked toward a gas tanker drifting far above. Streaks of emerald flared past her, and she twisted to and fro, trying to shake the enemy. Her fingers ached as she clutched her control yoke. She plotted a course in her head that would take her back to Chaddock. It wasn't a plan, she had no plan, but it was the least she could do for her squadron. She was diving when a miracle occurred. Her comm chimed. A message from D6L appeared on her console. Kairos' mission was complete. She cried out her response in a voice of clarity and desperation.
Blow the reactor! Do it!
She risked another glance toward the station. The great spoked wheel was a monstrous thing, flames licking one side, and smaller fires, dimmer and ornamented with electrical arcs, crackling where the two starfighter hangars should have been. The trails of TIEs hadn't stopped, and the clouds of enemy ships could have been mistaken for ash and dust. Quell waited for what she knew would come next. 9. Cairn Aiden didn't understand the look of horror on General Syndulla's face. He had watched the battle progress from the same vantage, seen the same esoteric tactical displays, and heard the same shouted reports as her. He had felt his underarms dampen with sweat and his stomach churn.
and he'd yearned desperately to stride to his quarters and find a bottle of, well, just about anything. But even with Shadow Wing released from its prison, they were on the verge of triumph. He saw energy readings spike on the long-range sensors. Someone called, "Visual confirmation! The reactor has been detonated!" This wasn't the plan. The plan had been to disable the 204th's orbital headquarters with the fighters still inside, crippling Pandem Nye's defenses so that the fleet could move in. But the attack could still prevail. A Shadow Wing without leadership, without a base of operations and support crews and fuel and equipment, would last days against a siege, not months. So why did General Syndulla stare at the strategy grid and the scanner readings like she was watching the end of the New Republic? "Critical temperature," she called across the room to a tactical droid. "What's the critical temperature?" The droid began rattling off numbers. Cairn didn't understand. By the looks of it, neither did the general. "Just tell me this," she said. "What happens if they don't get those fires under control?" Then Cairn understood. He sat back in his chair and tried to determine whether he'd won or lost. Chapter 18. Catastrophic Failure. 1. Quell watched the orbital station lurch, its burning port side listing downward. The center of the spoked wheel flashed and glimmered with fire and electricity and radiation bursts triggered by the detonation of the main reactor. Yet even inside her X-Wing's airtight cockpit, she heard the blasts more than she saw them. From above the station, she lacked a direct view of the reactor casing. The detonation wouldn't destroy the station. A dozen secondary reactors would power the repulsors and keep it aloft, with minimal power throughout. But it would no longer be a threat. As the last of the TIE fighters trailed out of the broken hangars, Quell hoped that the loss of their headquarters would force the pilots to pull back to the planet's surface. They might yet see the upper atmosphere to Syndulla's fleet. Her pursuers fell off her trail, confused or responding to new orders, and Quell dived toward Chaddock's last position. She was glancing at her scanner when she heard another peal of thunder and felt another shockwave below her fighter. The jolt passed, but she was searching for the source when a third shockwave hit her and slammed her helmet against the back of her seat. Light burned beneath the orbital station as if it sat on a field of fire. The flames along the port side now enveloped half the structure. When the next roll of thunder came, Quell realized what was happening. The fire spawned by the gas pod was growing in intensity. Whether due to the initial attack, the hangar explosions, or the detonation of the reactor, it was now strong enough to heat the other Tabana containment pods to bursting. One by one, the pods were igniting, and with each pod ravaged, the fire grew brighter and more terrible. The atmosphere began to churn as if the orbital station had become the center of a storm. Another pod ignited, then another. Tendrils of scarlet mist lit up and wove away from the station, like burning serpents or arteries pumping blood. The sky of Pandem Nye caught alight. All Quell could think of was Operation Cinder, the storm that the Empire had stoked to destroy Necronus. "It's happening again," she thought. "It's happening again." There was nothing but fire. Fire and the dark specks of TIE fighters against the light, riding thunder and destruction. Chass rode the waves as well. But no matter how unsuited for atmospheric flight the TIEs were, the B-Wing was worse. Only the gyro-stabilizers in the cockpit prevented her from being dashed against the canopy a dozen times over as the firestorm threw her higher. The slow, rhythmic beat of cymbals and soft words from the comm was nearly lost in the howl of the wind. She didn't know what was happening. Something had ignited the gas clouds of Pandem Nye, clearly. But how? She supposed it didn't matter. Was this a success? A failure? She wasn't sure. The TIEs were still firing.
She opened her throttle, trying to escape the storm as her enemies, shooting wildly in her direction, did the same. She grinned and rolled her ship and prepared to counterattack. Success or failure, nothing really changed. She would fight until the end. She adjusted the comm system until the music became deafening, overpowering the rush of flames and the sizzle of particle bolts. She thought briefly of Jyn Erso on Scarif, standing defiant before the battle station that would destroy a planet to stop her. Before even that thought faded away, replaced by the beat of a furious song. Three. Will Lark felt the heat through his canopy and through the metal shell of his fighter. His shields flickered in and out of visibility. He rode the shock waves of the detonations, but the A-Wing, for all its speed, was a fragile vessel. It wouldn't last long in a firestorm. Had Quell planned this? Was this all the result of destroying the reactor? The TIE fighters wouldn't last either. Like him, they sped away from the detonations, yet still they pursued him. Char and Blink looped and wove together, coordinating their shots and forcing Will to choose between particle bolts and burning clouds. The orbital station fell away beneath him as he tried desperately to elude his enemies without incinerating his craft. Did they recognize him as he recognized them? Did Char and Blink long to kill the last survivor of Riot Squadron, completing the mission they'd left unfinished? Why else would they still be following him, even amid catastrophe? Other thoughts nagged at him as he prized aside layers of fear to reach them. Kairos was still inside the orbital station. He couldn't help her. Nath had been flying close to the initial blasts when Will had been tossed away. Even now, he was failing to protect his partner. He activated his comm, adjusting frequency to try to breach the firestorm's interference.
Nath, I lost track of you. Can you get clear of the blasts?
Only static came in return.
Nath?
With a fraction of a second to spare, he dived out of the path of a particle bolt volley. He tried to make out the orbital station through a wall of flames. This couldn't have been some secret plan, he decided. The fire was spreading too far, too quickly, and he couldn't imagine what could occur if it... One problem at a time, he told himself. He glanced back at Char and Blink. He squinted at the burning clouds, readying himself to plunge through. He didn't know whether the Y-Wing was still out there, didn't know where it might be, but he couldn't leave Nath unprotected. Then the comm crackled, and a garbled voice said,
I'm all right. Forget about me right now and take care of yourself. Nath?
But the voice disappeared, buried in distortion. Will fled the fire and Shadow Wing, unsure what to do next. 4. The orbital station trembled steadily, the deck jittering and rattling beneath Nath's feet. Lights flickered, but the artificial gravity remained stable. Officers and stormtroopers rushed past him in the corridors, ignoring the burly man in a New Republic flight suit in favor of reaching their posts, or the escape pods. Nath wasn't sure what was happening. He assumed the New Republic strike team had eliminated the main reactor, but automated announcements had mentioned containment pods until the alert system had gone offline. Will's message was even more concerning, and the last transmission he'd received from T5 had mentioned seeking shelter out of the blast zone. He suspected he'd made a mistake in coming aboard, but he was here now.
Might as well finish the job.
He strode through the chaos as if he belonged there. No one halted him as he worked his way against the tide of fleeing bodies. He wondered if he had tripped an alarm in the airlock and the crew had simply ignored it. He kept his hand near the blaster on his hip, but never touched the weapon, better not to draw attention, and increased his pace to a jog when he saw others doing the same. Twice he was forced to alter his route when he reached a sealed blast door. Both doors radiated intense heat, as if they held back miniature suns. At last he arrived at the command center. Peering around the doorframe, he saw that the broad chamber was nearly deserted. Only a middle-aged major, an ensign hammering at her console one-handed while gripping a comlink. A red-cloaked figure that might have been a droid. And a crisply dressed colonel remained. Nath's gaze held on the colonel. She was keen-eyed, with a face of dark and crumpled parchment and thin hair leached of all color.
Sakara Nerys, he thought. Grandmother. We lost another gas pod, the major said.
He visibly struggled not to stammer.
The firestorm's diameter is expanding. Give me a tactical map, Nerys snapped.
The only sign Nath saw of nervousness was her hands, as she stiffly wove and unwove her fingers.
Show me all ships and orbital stations, gas extractors and colonies, within 5,000 kilometers.
The major glanced toward the ensign, still consumed by her own task, then dashed to another console. One of the displays blinked and showed a sea of bewildering symbols Nath couldn't decipher from afar. Nerys grimaced as she studied it.
Should we have the colonies evacuate? The major asked.
Nerys paced in front of the display, apparently deaf to the major's question.
You see them? She asked. 7 supply ships and 3 gas tankers, in addition to the extractors. Major, tell them to withdraw. Top speed. If the firestorm reaches them.
She cut herself off and tapped quickly at her own console.
The storm is burning fast and bright, and there's a chance it will exhaust itself. If it finds a damn tanker, though, or 3, it could have enough fuel to spread over this entire planet.
Nath saw her glance toward the red-cloaked figure, a tall, utterly still presence, with a plate of black glass in place of a face.
I don't need that on my conscience, she said. There's a story there, Nath thought.
But it wasn't what he'd come for. The major bent over another control panel, checked something, and looked back to the colonel.
We're having trouble broadcasting. I can...
Nerys waved him off.
Go! Do it manually.
The major left the command center at a run, streaking past Nath without a glance. Nath assessed his options, looked from the sweat-soaked ensign to the droid, to Nerys, and decided he wouldn't get a better opportunity. He stepped through the doorway and raised his blaster.
Grandmother, Nath Tansant.
He grinned his broadest, meanest grin and waited for her to turn.
You're a little busy, but you killed my friends. I thought we should chat.
He was pleased to see that for all her poise, Colonel Nerys was still capable of looking surprised. 5. Buffeted by the storm, Quell's X-Wing spun and burned. Wind and flame swirled around the orbital station, streaking outward in ribbons of annihilation. Quell's legs still worked her rudder pedals, and her gloved hands played along the control panels. But her mind was transfixed by the hell that surrounded her. The holocaust of her own making. Images of Necronus, of the colorful silt storm, wet and flaying and catastrophic, battering structures and flooding city streets with mud, mixed freely with nightmares of the present. She envisioned firestorms consuming the stations housing thousands upon thousands of civilian colonists. She pictured citizens on the planet's surface looking up and knowing that they were doomed. Her mind flashed to planetary bombardments, operations she'd dutifully joined at Metradi and Menor Day, where she'd watched ordnance fall and atomize settlements. She recalled those missions' pre-flight briefings and the professionalism with which she'd carried out the slaughter. She remembered cheering with a crowd on the observation deck of the Pursuer as she beheld the mighty Star Destroyer annihilating its targets. She recalled the face of Major Soren Keyes and every mistake she'd ever made. One of the spokes of the orbital station's wheel began to buckle as the fires melted scaffolding and support struts. Metal plating tore loose and fell in 100-meter sheets. From a vague analytical distance, Quell remembered that there was a city somewhere below, a settlement on Pandem Nai, eking out its existence in the station's shadow. Quell had an extremely good memory, yet she couldn't recall the city's name. She pictured molten slag and jagged wreckage falling from the pyre and impacting houses and factories, crushing, burning.
Whatever the pursuers' bombardments had done, this would be worse, just as destructive, but more callous and imprecise. She was flying over a graveyard. Her X-Wing was diving. She wondered momentarily if D6L was responsible, but the movements were her own. She hadn't heard from the droid since her ship had first been engulfed by the flames, and though she should have been concerned for the astromech, she didn't have the space left in her consciousness. She sucked a thin, hot breath between her teeth and saw spots as she dipped below the horizon line of the station. She ignored the dots of TIE fighters on her scanner and angled under the station's center while maintaining her near-vertical descent. Gravity pulled her down. Thrusters pushed her. She felt a wad of saliva catch in her throat and nearly choked. The atmosphere around her changed from deep scarlet to tawny orange. Finally, she spotted her target. An enormous girder as wide as her starship shed from the orbital station and speeding toward the planet's surface. She squeezed her firing trigger and loosed a flurry of particle bolts that sheared and shattered the metal. She kept firing, kept plummeting, reducing shards to shrapnel and shrapnel to ash.
Lark to... Lark to anyone!
The comm buzzed and popped. If Lark hadn't identified himself, Quell wouldn't have recognized his voice.
What happened?
He asked. She tried to pull out of her dive. Her engines groaned and rebelled. Repulsors were useless, more apt to tear the X-Wing to pieces than steady it. She leveled the ship and continued to fall. For 3 seconds, she was certain she would crash. Then she angled herself upward again and flew. The comm crackled a second time. Lark's voice came more clearly now.
What have we done?
He asked. The question tore her out of her dream and back to reality. It demanded an answer.
I did it,
she said. The responsibility was hers. The mistakes were hers. She wasn't sure whether anyone but Will Lark could hear her. But as she shot skyward and saw another black mass above, another scarred chunk of debris from the decomposing orbital station, she knew that her responsibility demanded action. Alphabet Squadron was hers. She gave her final orders.
We failed to take Pandem Nai,
she said.
This is now a rescue mission.
The debris hurtled toward her, and she fired. Chapter 19. Emergency Readjustment. 1. This is now a rescue mission.
What does that mean?
Will called.
What are we supposed to do?
Quell didn't reply. The comm buzzed and hissed. Will called Nath's name and Chass's and heard nothing. When he called to Kairos, he heard a squeal, an electronic tone that might have been acknowledgement or might have been a burst of static. He was, for all practical purposes, alone. Barring his shadowing pursuers and the ghosts of Riot Squadron. He heard the clacking of Satanique and the steady drone of Renunja giving orders, warning him to elude the weapons fire aimed in his direction. Yet over the voices of his old squadron mates came Quell again and again. This is now a rescue mission. In the Ordal cluster, he had been left without comrades, forced to choose the fate of himself and his mission. He had been tested by the Ordal god and haunted by Riot Squadron ever since. Now he was again forced to choose, pursued by the same enemy, and he felt suddenly calm as he spun his A-Wing about and ascended away from the station. This is now a rescue mission. Not a mission of revenge against Shadow Wing, not a mission of conquest to take worlds for the New Republic. For the first time since leaving the Lodestar, he felt sure of himself and his purpose. He didn't know if the dead of Riot Squadron would approve, but his ancestors on home would. There was nothing he could do to prevent the station's collapse. There could have been thousands of Imperial crew aboard, and though he felt a pang, he couldn't usher them to the escape pods. He suspected that the Imperials weren't who Quell wanted them to rescue, but the decisions were his now. Nor could he arrest the spread of the firestorm directly, and it was spreading. But shooting particle bolts into the burning clouds would do no good. He glanced at his scanner, flickering and distorted by the storm, then looked through his canopy, This was a rescue mission, he thought. So who could he help? He adjusted course and spotted the distant silhouettes of Imperial vessels racing away from the storm front. Supply carriers, a corvette, and among them a massive slab of a ship lined with spherical containment units. A gas tanker. It crawled through the sky. Will dipped his port side and peered at the churning flames beneath him. At the rate the storm was expanding, it would surely catch the tanker. It would ignite the pods and... Another cascade of emerald particle bolts tore past his ship. One struck home, tearing the targeting sensor off his starboard cannon and causing the ship to rock and howl. "Leave me alone," he snapped, and accelerated toward the tanker. He could outrace the firestorm with ease. The tanker could not. He glanced at the containment pods sprouting from the tanker's hull like the legs of a crawling insect. There were at least 24. He tapped his comm and opened a channel.
"Imperial tanker ship," he called. "How can I assist?"
There was no reply. He'd lost sight of his pursuers, and his scanner was useless. Another glance showed him that the tendrils of flame were rapidly closing. He crossed the distance to the enormous vessel and chose his first target. His cannons blazed and sung. He turned and rolled as he flew closer to the tanker, bolts flying and sparking as they struck the moorings of the first containment pod. Metal blackened, crumpled, and finally buckled, sending the pod plummeting toward the planet's surface. It didn't feel like a victory. Will hoped the pod would strike somewhere in the wilderness, beyond the ground settlements, crumpling without detonating. If not, however, he had no other options. Better to burn on the ground than to fuel the conflagration in the skies, obliterating the tanker and engulfing the planet in an endless inferno. Flame caressed the tanker now, rushing to fill the gaps between the pods. Will tried to match the vessel's course and speed, steadying the A-wing as he aimed at the next set of moorings. But the storm winds bounced him 10 meters into the air, and his blast went wide. He lined up another shot and loosed a second volley. The pod creaked and swung from the moorings, but didn't detach as fire flowed around it. Will grimaced and swallowed a curse. With the pod hanging precariously, he no longer had a clean shot. He didn't know how long the containment unit had before the gas inside ignited. This close, any blast would rip through his A-wing along with the tanker. He angled for the battered moorings anyway. "One last try," he decided, and laughed as he saw emerald bolts rip through the air around him. His pursuers had caught up, and there was nothing he could do but hope he survived long enough to complete his pass. He was 50 meters from the pod when crimson streaked across his view. The half-broken moorings flared white, and the containment pod dropped away. Will traced the afterimage burnt into his vision and looked to the shooter, a New Republic U-wing racing toward him from the direction of the orbital station. He couldn't make out any details, but he was certain that the crest of Alphabet Squadron was painted on its nose.
"Good to see you, Kairos," he said. "And glad you made it. Take the portside pods. I'll handle the starboard."
The TIEs behind him poured streams of emerald destruction through the space Will's A-wing had occupied seconds earlier. Blink and Char wanted him dead, rescue mission or not. But he thought of his last encounter with Shadow Wing. He knew what he had to try. 2. The swarm had found her. A mournful song of band-filled tones and gasped vocals accompanied Chas as she rotated her ship, accelerated and dived, charged into squadrons and sprayed cannon fire across burning clouds. Shadow Wing's TIEs englobed her, and her shields were long gone. Second by second, her systems were failing as particle bolts seared her primary airfoil. She was doomed, but she wasn't defeated yet. One TIE strayed into her field of fire, and she annihilated it with a cannon burst. Another mistimed its shots, and she dropped 20 meters and watched the charged beam strike another of her foes, sending it spinning away. She sang along with the music, though she didn't know the words. She'd heard a staticky voice, Quell's voice, declare something through her comm minutes earlier, but she hadn't understood it, and the voice hadn't returned. She didn't know where the rest of her squadron was, or what their mission had become. The whole planet seemed to be burning. She was pretty sure that hadn't been the plan. She no longer cared. She was frightened and satisfied as her mission came to its end. She intended to kill as many Imperials as she could. The instruments under her right arm snapped and sparked, and her cockpit lit up with electricity. The fabric of her sleeve blackened, and she pulled her arm to her chest as the suppressors kicked in, and the side panel fizzled and died. Another enemy shot pierced one of her S-foils, disabling its cannon and shaking her ship. She spun the B-wing around, saw the globe of TIEs closing, and decided on a final plan. She would let her starfighter fall, cockpit and weapons aimed the sky, and spin and shoot and spin and shoot until her enemies were gone, or she was destroyed at last. She was ready. It wasn't the martyrdom of Jyn Erso, but it was good enough. Yet as she lay in her seat and pitched her B-wing back, the rain of enemy fire ceased. Above her, the TIE fighters rose into the air, turned, and retreated into the obscuring firestorm. She wanted to shout at them, to demand they return. She laughed in outrage and confusion. Then she heard the voice through her comm, garbled and tinny.
I repeat, this is Will Lark of New Republic Squadron Alphabet to all ships on all frequencies. Please cease hostilities and provide immediate assistance. If we don't...
The voice hesitated.
If we don't, everything burns. If we don't, we could lose the planet. Nothing else matters. Nothing else if we can stop this. This is Will Lark.
Will Lark, she thought. You're doing it again. You're taking it all away from me. She reignited her thrusters and slammed her burnt arm against the console to reset the scanner. Somewhere in this storm of death, she could find a fight worthy of her. 3. Now, you're choosing to do this? Colonel Nerys's voice wasn't so much outraged as astonished. Nath heard the subtext. How stupid can you be?
Best chance I've got, Nath said, and swept the blaster pistol from Nerys to the ensign.
The former remained standing. The latter sat motionless at her console. Nath stepped to the side, well out of reach of the red-cloaked droid.
Anyone moves, I shoot.
This station is falling apart, Nerys went on, as if lecturing. The whole planet is in danger.
Then let's hurry it up. Answer my questions and we'll be done.
He walked slowly around the perimeter of the room, making sure he hadn't missed any obvious threats, and giving himself a clear view of the entrance. He'd taken hostages before. He'd preferred doing it with a crew. But Colonel Nerys had taken his crew away from him. As he passed the ensign, the woman's back to Nath, and Nath's back to the wall, he saw her hand slide toward her hip. It might not have been an attempt to pull a weapon, but he thought it better not to take the risk. Pistol still aimed at Nerys, he brought his fist down on the ensign's head, slamming her face into the console. She slumped in her chair.
Could be unconscious, could be faking, Nath thought.
He was ready to shoot when the ensign slid from the chair and hit the floor.
Not faking, he decided.
That left the grandmother of Shadow Wing and the droid.
What do you want? Nerys asked.
She didn't protest, didn't cry out to protect her officer. Nath appreciated that.
About 7 months back, he said, you sent fighters to the Trenchinovu shipyards to repel a rebel attack. You remember?
Her eyes held on Nath. He saw no flicker of hesitation, no moment in which she searched her memory.
I remember the operation, she said, but none of the details. One squadron, I think. A minor altercation. You got it logged?
This time she did hesitate, if only for an instant.
Yes. Pull it up.
He gestured to the nearest console with his blaster.
Slowly.
She bent gingerly over the console. He wondered if she had spinal problems, and tapped at the controls. Reluctantly, he put his back to the red-cloaked droid in order to supervise. He didn't see her trigger any alarms or attempt to signal for help. She was sensible, he thought, She knew the station was a mess anyway, so her odds of getting reinforcements were slim. Or maybe she genuinely wanted to keep her people at their current tasks. Her alarm about the planet had sounded sincere.
I have it, she said. Trenchinovu shipyards. The 204th loaned out a squadron to the Star Destroyer Sanction to defend against an anticipated terrorist raid. As I recall, the Pursuer had been meant to participate as well, but a crisis arose elsewhere, forcing our squadron to remain at Trenchinovu while awaiting the Pursuer's return.
Two Star Destroyers against one Rebel Bomber Squadron?
Naresh shrugged. Our intelligence about the attack might have been wrong. Better to be overprepared. She could have been lying. Nath had no way to be sure. It didn't matter in the slightest, yet an unexpected rage welled up inside him. He'd come here for certainty. He'd come for an ending. If he walked away without knowing the truth...
It doesn't matter, he told himself. Ask what does.
Who was on the flight roster? Give me the TIE pilots.
Naresh tapped another key, and a list of names appeared on the display. She read the names as he did.
Captain Aelord Smythe, First Lieutenant Den Masker, Second Lieutenant Samnil Piers, Second Lieutenant...
He heard the hitch in her voice and ignored the rest of the names.
What?
He asked.
What is it?
She looked at him blankly. Irritated, he waved the blaster.
You paused for a second, he said. What did you see?
Naresh straightened gradually and turned to face Nath.
They're all dead, she said. I'd forgotten, is all.
Nath stalked the console, too close to Naresh, he knew, despite her age, and held the barrel of his blaster centimeters from her throat as he tapped the controls, opening the pilot records. She hadn't had time to alter the data. The records supported her claim. His guts clenched as he opened each file in turn. Captain Aelord Smythe, deceased. First Lieutenant Den Maskar, deceased. 12 pilots, and every one of them gone. This wasn't what he'd come for. He heard his breathing coming fast, hot, and tasting of bile.
How can they all be dead?
He snapped.
7 months is a long time for a TIE pilot.
Nath remembered. Most flyers didn't make it a year.
But your guys were good, he said.
He caught a flash of a smile and resisted the urge to club her face.
They were. These weren't our best. But it's been a difficult period, and once you start replacing pilots, the whole squadron's survivability goes down.
She eyed the records on display.
Maskar went almost a month after Trenchinovu, victim to an explosion on the flight deck. Sabotaged fuel piping purchased from Separatist sympathizers.
Separatist?
Nath asked. Was she senile?
Separatist, rebel, it's all the same.
He grunted and she went on.
After Maskar, we lost 3 more across 5 months. It was only after the Emperor's assassination that the massacres began. We lost good people at Necronus, at Indusan, and the Ordal Cluster.
She suddenly laughed, a crisp barking sound that suggested as much disdain as mirth.
Look around! Why do you think there's nobody here? Why do you think you won?
Nath forced himself to slow his breathing and quash the trembling in his blaster hand. The pilots who had slaughtered his crew were dead. He had no proof of this beyond Shadow Wing's own records and the word of their commander. But it was as much evidence as he could ever hope to obtain. They were dead. They were dead already. He'd come for vengeance, and they were dead.
Who authorized the mission?
He asked. It's the Empire, she said. Who didn't sign off at one level or another?
He growled.
Who approved the plan? Who said yes to the ambush?
I did, Colonel Naresh said. That was the answer he'd been looking for.
He tightened his grip on the blaster and let the rage boil inside his mind. Time to balance the scales as best he could. Then he remembered his other mission, and he almost laughed.
I have another question, he said. You know a pilot called Erica Quell?
Her brow tightened.
I know the name. You got any opinion on her? Anything you want to share?
She was capable. As I recall, her record was undistinguished, but not without merit. One of my majors quite liked her. I don't recall ever speaking to her directly.
Let's see her file, Nath said.
Colonel Nares shrugged and turned back to the console.
No use protecting the dead, she said.
And the screen flickered and displayed a new record. Nath watched Nares out of the corner of his eye as he read the contents, skimming over mission details and performance evaluations, until he reached the end.
Well, he thought. That's interesting. Transfer it to a data chip, he said.
Nares eyed him with a sort of revolted pride, and he laughed, entering the commands himself. When the transfer was complete, he stepped across the room to the transfer unit and pocketed the chip.
Are we done, then? Colonel Nares asked.
He looked at her. She stood straight as any junior cadet on the receiving end of an inspection, full of imperial pomposity. She knew what was coming, Nath was sure of that, and she was ready to meet it without fear.
Yeah,
he said. He wanted to see if she would reach for her sidearm. He'd noticed the pistol on her belt the moment he'd entered the command center, but he'd allowed her to keep it in order to narrow her options. It gave Nath one thing to worry about instead of many. Ultimately, though, she was too slow. Age or indecision kept her from taking up the weapon in the half a second Nath permitted himself to wait. He pulled the trigger and felt his pistol tug at his hand, flare with heat. The bolt struck Colonel Nares square in the chest and filled the room with the odor of ozone, melted fabric, and burnt flesh. There was no chorus of spirits, no approving nods from the ghosts of Nath's crew at the death of their destroyer. Just a dull, numbed satisfaction in his ribcage. He'd done what he had set out to do. As the deck shuddered beneath him, he ran out of the command center and hoped his droid was still waiting. 4. Colonel Shakara Nares lay on the cool metal floor of the command center and knew that she was dying. Every tremor through the deck plating sent quivers through her chest. There was little pain. The blaster bolt had cauterized the wound instantly, leaving only a radiant halo of heat around the burnt hole. But the numbness was disquieting in its own right. She considered her options and obligations in a flash and found little to do of any use. There were no final orders to be issued, nothing she could do to stop the Separatists or save Pandem Nye, or wake Ensign Negri, or even avenge herself on the grandstanding bastard who'd shot her. She twisted her body and felt a hot spike jab at her abdomen. She looked across the command center, and her eyes found the red-cloaked wraith. The Emperor's messenger. It observed her with its eyeless glass faceplate and did not move. She dragged herself forward, clutching at the seams in the deck plating. The tremors, her own along with the station's, nearly dislodged her fingertips from the cracks, but she tightened her grip and pulled. The journey took her 1 meter, 2, 3 across the command center before her strength was gone.
Tell me, she said in a desiccated voice.
The Emperor's messenger bowed its head, tracking to her new position. It did not speak.
Tell me why, she said. Why observe us? Why say nothing? Why Operation Cinder?
The Emperor's messenger only stared.
I can't tell anyone now. Look at me.
She tried to roll over to reveal her wound to the machine, but she lacked the vigor.
I served him for decades. I just want to know what he intended.
She had trusted that the destruction in the Cronus was necessary. Cinder had failed in other worlds, on Naboo and Abednego, but not on the Cronus. Her unit had done its duty.
Tell me it was worth it. Tell me why.
Her vision began to leave her, obscured by a fog that crept inside her eyes. She shook her head to clear it, not knowing how much time had passed, yet aware that her death was imminent. She parted her lips to make demands of the messenger one final time. but the words failed to come. Her gaze fell to the floor. She saw red leather whirling and retreating as the messenger turned to leave. There, in the command center of Orbital One, Shakara Nerys, loyal servant of the Emperor and grand strategist of the 204th Imperial Fighter Wing, died in despair, wondering if she had made a mistake, long before, and far away. 5. Indukron. Quell remembered now, the city's name was Indukron. She caught glimpses of it as she accelerated toward the surface and penetrated the lowest layer of ochre clouds, an expansive, flat settlement of squat factories, prefab housing, and metal silos, sweeping across the rocky plains of Pandem Nye like moss. It was an ugly thing compared with the glittering skyscrapers of Coruscant, or the citadels of Necronus, or even the carved mountain metropolises of Abednito. It was barely worth saving, barely worth dying for. But she would if she had to. She dived in her X-Wing, chasing burning clusters of debris plummeting from the orbital station. Over and over, she targeted blackened metal sheeting and tumbling pylons with quick bursts of cannon fire, then reversed course, ascending skyward to intercept the next shower of industrial flotsam. The stress on her body was terrible. Her muscles ached as if she'd been running for hours, and every motion released pain and lactic acid. But the stress on her ship was worse. She'd pushed her thrusters to their maximum for minutes on end in a planetary environment, subjected every bolt and computer system to immense pressures. Her astromech droid no longer seemed to be repairing her systems as they broke down one by one. As she tore through the ochre clouds on another ascent, a horrifying bang exploded on her port side. She recognized the sound. Some falling shard of metal had struck one of her S-foils. It wasn't the first time. She hoped she hadn't lost the cannon, but if so, she had 3 left. She tried to pull up a damage report, but the display had gone black. Heat was becoming a problem, too. The hull of her ship was practically glowing from her maneuvers, and she would melt her own cannons if she didn't adjust. She licked her parched lips and strained to see the next target. Things were only going to get worse. It was only pieces of the station falling now, but there were enormous modules that hadn't yet lost their repulsors. All of it would come down. If she couldn't save Pandem Nye, maybe she could save Indukron. She wouldn't make the same mistake a second time. 6. The transmission came in 17 fragments that the Lodestar's computers strained to patch together. The firestorm above Pandem Nye was to blame. It had disrupted communications, degrading signal strength, and necessitating the use of data recovery programs to process the simplest messages. That was fine with Cairn Aiden. He smiled grimly to himself as software tried to make sense of the communique sent to his station.
No point hurrying when you've already lost the race.
Outside his isolated corner, the rest of the Tactical Operations Center was in a panic. General Syndulla was shouting orders, demanding that the New Republic fleet breach the minefield and approach Pandem Nye.
"We have to get in there," she called. "We have to help them. Tell our ships to divert all power to forward shields and ram straight through if they have to."
"General,"
a white-bearded old human was protesting.
"If we do that, our entire fleet will be vulnerable as it emerges from the minefield. The Imperial warships are ready to battle. They'll cut us to pieces."
"They won't," Syndulla said. "Look at the tactical display. They're not maneuvering for an attack."
Cairn looked to the transparent plate overlaid with ship markers and course vectors. The general was right. The Imperial vessels were scattering, too busy trying to escape the firestorm to pay attention to the New Republic fleet. He stood from his chair, suddenly alarmed. He couldn't be the only one to see it, could he?
"They'll try to flee," he said. "If we break formation, we'll lose the blockade. The Imperial ships will jump to light speed. All of them will get away."
"I'm aware of that, Officer Aiden," Syndulla said. "My biggest concern right now isn't a dozen Imperial supply ships and cruisers escaping the system."
"What about the 204th?
He asked. It was, despite the sharpness of his tone, a genuine question, He could barely read the displays. He was no military strategist. And as much as he disliked looking foolish, he needed to know. But Syndulla retorted without patience.
Pandem Nye is burning. What happens to the 204th? I don't really care.
Cairn started to snap back, but she had already turned away. He tuned out his inner ranting and forced himself to examine what he knew. Most, maybe all of Shadow Wing squadrons were present in the firestorm. The TIEs lacked hyperdrives, which meant they were stuck in system unless they docked with a carrier. That would take time, but given the catastrophe, they might have the time they needed. Clearly Syndulla wasn't about to intervene. If Shadow Wing wanted to escape, it had a chance. That was the stark truth of it. But Pandem Nye would no longer be a threat. Whatever became of it, its days as an Imperial stronghold were over. Somewhere in his head, he heard ITO's voice ask in a low, unthreatening tone,
"Does that bring you comfort? Given the fact you can't change the situation or quench the fires?"
Cairn almost snarled as he shook the thought away. The last thing he needed was the droid playing conscience in his imagination. He felt the lodestar rumble softly as its thrusters pushed the battleship forward. Then a jolt shook the vessel with a metallic ring like a bulkhead buckling, nearly tossing Cairn off his feet.
"That must be the first mine."
He hoped Syndulla and the captain knew what the ship could endure. His hands were trembling. He wanted a drink. The console in front of him chimed and gave him something better. The transmission, reassembled, had come from Nath Tenzant. It contained Erica Quell's personnel record from the 204th Imperial Fighter Wing. Chapter 20. Redefinition of Victory Conditions. 1. The TIEs were no longer trying to kill him. Not most of them, anyway. Instead, Will flew alongside the pilots of the 204th, through the battering storm, and toward the last of the gas tankers. He'd seen a second TIE squadron head for one of the surviving extraction stations, and a third set course for a supply ship. With his newfound comrades, he'd cut dozens of volatile containment units loose from their moorings. He prayed that it would be enough to stop the firestorm, that all their efforts wouldn't result in a charred ember of a planet, and a blaze too hot to burn out, even without the fuel they denied it. Kairos led the way to the tanker in her U-Wing. Her vessel had endured the Inferno's wrath well. Its shields and hull were sturdy, built for punishment that would obliterate an A-Wing or a TIE fighter. Its additional weight meant the winds were less likely to hurl it into the tanker's side, or cause a mid-air collision with an ally. Meanwhile, Will's ship had lost one cannon entirely, and he'd burned his hand through the glove of his flight suit, trying to touch the canopy. He tried not to pity himself. Char and Blink, flying behind him and capable of destroying his ship with the squeeze of a trigger, were probably worse off. A TIE fighter didn't even have shields. The pilots must have been roasting alive. He adjusted his comm with tender fingers.
"Approaching target. Counting 40 gas pods. Divide them up, same as before."
Static roared in reply. He couldn't make out a word, and his system's diagnostics were down. He wasn't even sure if the problem was on his end or the TIE's.
"All right," he murmured.
He wanted to stroke the console, but feared being burned again.
"One more tanker, one more mission, and we'll get you home. Nothing wrong that can't be repaired."
The TIEs, the U-Wing, and Will broke formation as they neared the tanker, dipping below its mass to access the pods. Streams of emerald and crimson poured from the fighters, carving away at metal. But fire washed over them like a tide, and each swell forced them to scatter. The pods might last against the full force of the storm for a few moments, but the TIE fighters in the A-Wing couldn't. The first pods fell toward Pandem Nye, even as TIEs were blown away by the gale and failed to return. Will saw one fighter, he thought it might have been Char, swept into the flame and burst like a nova, providing more fuel and heat to the blaze. Will wanted to mourn, but he didn't have the time. He tried desperately to cut away at a pod's moorings, but even his single functioning laser cannon sputtered and crackled and caused his ship to vibrate with every shot. The target barely looked scorched. The pods closest to the storm front began to glow with heat. The surviving TIEs and Kairos didn't stop firing, didn't stop flying.
Will Lark believed in his mission. It felt right. It was a shame, he thought, that they might fail anyway. 2. There was no one left to fight. Chas drifted through the storm, thrusters at low power, and energy diverted to stabilizers and repulsors. The wind carried her ship and fire licked her hull. She had nowhere to go. She saw nothing through the flames, had no functioning scanner. Only gravity suggested a difference between up and down. Her music had stopped, the beat replaced by the throbbing of her burnt right arm. Without a battle, she saw no point in trying to fix whatever had gone wrong. She felt anxiety like withdrawal in her veins, a desperate craving for the fear and tranquility and certainty she had felt only moments before. "Is this all I deserve?" she wondered. Would they find her corpse charred to the bone, broken to ashen fragments in a B-wing crashed on a cinder of a world? Would anyone even discover that much? Or would she just be counted among the thousands, the tens of thousands, who died in a disaster that had wiped out two warring fleets? She didn't want to boil to death in her own sweat. She didn't want this. "Maybe I do deserve it." Something burst far below, lifting her ship on a shockwave. She bounced in her harness, and the B-wing leapt forward, tumbling through the heat and light. Chas leaned over the controls, trying to level the ship out, and searching for some scrap of information on the console to guide her. When she looked up, her dry lips parted, and she stared. Far beyond the B-wing, silhouetted against the burning sky, was the wedge of a Quasar Fire-class cruiser carrier, orbited by at least 20 TIE fighters. At one time in her life, from so far away, she might have mistaken the cruiser carrier for a far larger Star Destroyer. But after the chase through the Oradell cluster, recognition came instantly. Was it shadowing? Were they trying to escape? How could it be anything else? She fumbled to redistribute power to her thrusters as she resettled herself in her seat. The starfighter lurched, her engine emitting a sweet chemical odor. The cruiser carrier was moving away, but it too appeared hampered by the storm winds. She could catch it. Panting for breath, ignoring the pain in her arm, she reached under the console and pulled a manual toggle to reset her subsystems. Nothing happened, and she tried again. Finally, beneath a tinny ring and the roar of the storm, her music started up again, a diva pop track with an easygoing beat and saccharine lyrics, recalling some local holiday banned by the Empire. Chas couldn't remember why she'd even brought it with her, but she liked the rhythm and the irony in the verses. "Leave it on," she decided. "You're lucky it's playing at all." Weapons came next. If the cruiser carrier hadn't spotted her yet, a test would give away her position. Still, she gave her trigger a squeeze, and was satisfied to see the autoblaster below her cockpit and her laser cannon spit particle bolts. The ion weapons were less responsive, but two stuttered out white pulses of energy. Against a cruiser carrier and 20 TIEs, she'd have to move fast. Getting close to the carrier, she decided, fry its deflector generators on the first pass, go for the hangar on the second. Maybe she could get inside, rip through the thing like a bullet from a slug thrower. She could stop shadowing. Where everyone else had lost sight of the mission, she could finish it. "No shields, broken weapons, and the target we all came for. The people who killed Fatime. It's your sort of fight, Chas." She eyeballed her distance from the cruiser carrier. 20 seconds till she was in range, maybe. The TIEs had noticed her, but they weren't leaving the larger ship, just forming a defensive barrier at its rear. Chas picked her first target, ready to scatter the swarm.
"Chas!"
A voice broke through the music.
"Chas, is that you?"
Will Lark. The man who'd stolen her targets, who'd stolen her choices twice now. Not the man she wanted to deal with, not the voice she wanted to hear in her final moments.
"Chas, we need you up here. Trace the transmission vector of your scanners down. We need to cut away the fuel pods on this tanker, or the whole thing goes up."
"I'm working,"
she shouted.
"I've got a carrier full of TIEs right here, and they're making a break for it."
"You can hear me?"
he replied. "You're an idiot," she thought, but he sounded so relieved she couldn't muster much spite.
"Listen to me. We need you.
Quell's orders were that this is a rescue mission, so...
Screw Quell. Our mission was to stop Shadow Wing. I'm here. I'm stopping them.
She forced herself to draw a deep breath. She was coming into firing range of the TIEs.
You don't need me, Will. You keep the fire contained. Let me finish the job.
She squeezed her trigger, aiming at one of the TIEs. Particle blasts and crackling energy streaked through the burning clouds. Her foe neatly evaded the volley with a quick horizontal cut. The TIEs didn't scatter. Their defensive formation remained intact.
Please,
Will said. The TIEs returned a volley of their own. Chas's viewport flashed emerald, and she spun and dodged, her breathing accelerating. She felt the music reverberating in her skull, calming her and guiding her motions. If she couldn't scatter the TIEs, she could blaze through the center of the formation. She could overcharge her weapons, build enough momentum to crash past the fighters and ram the carrier. It had to be in bad shape already from the firestorm. She could deliver the finishing blow. She redistributed her power again, keeping an eye on the steady streams of particle bolts outside.
Goodbye, Will,
she said.
Do what you got to. Tell people about me, huh?
But it wasn't Will's voice that replied.
I know what you're thinking, but look around you. We all blew it. There aren't going to be any damn heroes today, sister.
Will's voice cried,
Nath!
And the older man snickered. A cannon blast passed close enough that she heard the hissing interaction of charged particles and gas. She kept her course steady, eyes locked on the cruiser carrier, but her shoulders were quivering. Nath's words repeated in her brain. She tried to brush them away, but they grew into an image of the Lodestar, of General Syndulla and the aftermath of the battle. She heard angry shouts and accusations about the fate of the planet Pandem Nai. No one would care about a cruiser carrier.
Chas,
Will said.
We need you right now.
She slammed her fists against the console. It was a childish, petulant act. She let herself indulge, then pulled up and away from the quasar fire. Because Will was right. Nath was right. Of course they were right. Her ship rattled and bounced as she cut through the burning sky, the blaze cascading across her canopy as she penetrated a gas pocket. When she emerged, she saw the tanker, a massive vessel somehow more intimidating than any Star Destroyer, and a handful of TIE fighters along with Will, Nath, and Kairos, firing haplessly at the containment pods. One of the pods was aflame, some layer of insulation between the metal shell and the Tabana inside, already ignited. She rolled her fighter in the pod's direction and squeezed her control yoke. The autoblaster pumped the bolts out of sync with her music. The pod detached and plummeted like a meteor. Nath and Will were laughing and cheering and shouting in desperation, strafing moorings as a team, while Kairos matched the tanker's speed and cut away metal with precise, powerful blasts. The TIEs danced around all of them, thrown from one end of the tanker to the other by the storm winds. Chas flew beneath the tanker's enormous bulk and hoped the storm wouldn't smash her into the underside. As they worked, Chas heard faint, distorted messages from other TIE squadrons, reporting success defending gas extractors and supply ships.
It's up to us,
Will urged as one by one the tanker's containment pods fell away. But Chas's burnt arm throbbed and sent pain up to her skull, and the music became harder to hear. She increased the volume until it felt like her ears would bleed. Her fighter's strike foils scraped against the tanker more than once, leaving sparking trails. Her cockpit's gyro-stabilizers failed, forcing her to keep her ship upright to prevent her body from being brutalized. But she held the vessel together. She found new targets. She tore another pod free, and another. She set her comm to broadcast to anyone listening, inflicting the saccharine diva pop on all the ships above Pandem Nai. Together with her squadron, she stood against the storm to save a world. 3. She couldn't see anymore. The canopy of her X-Wing was plastered with ash and dust and oil, and a thick crack ran halfway down the center pane. Only one small patch remained blessedly clear, and Erica Quell twisted her aching body so that she could glimpse the sky and the falling debris outside. She was down to a single functioning laser cannon, but that would suffice. She soared and dived and soared and dived,
blasting at the crumbling remnants of the orbital station above Indicron. The wreckage she couldn't destroy, she broke into parts, hoping they would burn up and descend, or land beyond the city borders. She thought she glimpsed the flare of a turbo laser from far below, a turret defending the city from ground level, but it might just have been a flicker in her sore eyes. In truth, she didn't want to look below. She didn't want to know the state of Indicron. She'd never heard sounds quite like the whines and moans her thrusters made. If she'd been in her tie, she could have diagnosed the problem, made a guess at how long the starfighter could stay aloft. But the X-Wing was too unfamiliar. A flashing indicator, one of the few lights on her console that still operated, warned her to eject. She didn't even know how an X-Wing's ejection mechanisms worked. In all her studies, it hadn't occurred to her to check. If she'd had the breath,